Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavit Afwai. A strategic partnership that would provide a framework for Afghanistan's future relationship with the United States, signed by presidents of the U.S. and Afghanistan and just ratified in the Afghan parliament. Even the name, however, sets the framework for U.S. presence in Afghanistan, Enduring Strategic Partnership Agreement, which, when broken down, would ensure the presence of American forces in the country through 2014 and even beyond. On this news analysis, we will look at why a U.S. troop withdrawal and handover to Afghan forces may be just cosmetic, and why facts on the ground indicate a much longer U.S. presence in that country, such as their numerous military bases.
The Afghan parliament has voted in favor of a controversial pact just weeks after it was signed between Washington and Kabul. Afghans believe their lawmakers have only undermined the nation's will by giving the go-ahead for the deal.
There is no security here. They have signed a strategic partnership deal just to seek their own interests. They do not care about the lives of Afghans.
These foreigners are here just for their own interests. They are not here to save our lives.
Others believe foreign presence is a main obstacle to peace and security in the country.
The partnership deal has allowed the U.S. to stay here for the next 10 years, but their military presence here will not restore peace and stability at all.
Afghans bearing the brunt of years of war say the decade-long battle has brought them nothing but humiliation, misery, and civilian deaths. They've also voiced concern that such deals could destabilize the region and would undermine the country's sovereignty.
You know, these 2 points that we are worried. Number one, tell the military existence of the American is here. Our sovereignty is facing question. We will not be calling our country as a sovereign state. And number two, the region, we want not only peace for ourselves, we want the peace for the whole region. And if the American military is there, there is no security for the region at all.
Afghanistan is known to be the graveyard of empires. It defeated the Soviet army 3 decades ago. The region has also seen the fall of Alexander the Great and the British in the 19th century. Now, what makes the U.S. think it's any different? The U.S.-led war in Afghanistan has claimed the lives of thousands of foreign troops so far. Many others have committed suicide or are struggling with various types of psychological disorder. Out of experience, former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev has advised the U.S. to retreat from Afghanistan, saying this war is unwinnable. But Gorbachev's advice seems to have fallen on deaf ears.
Well, let me introduce our guest to get this news analysis going. We have from Washington, Gareth Porter. He's an historian and investigative journalist joining us. From London, Richard Millett, a journalist and commentator. And Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, joining us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. I'd like to start with you, Richard Millett. Why is the United States still in Afghanistan?
Hi, well, it seems that they have agreed that all combat troops will be withdrawn by the end of 2014, and after that time there will be civilian advisors. And this is all at the invitation, as you've just laid out in your detailed report, at the request of the Afghanistan parliament. So to a certain extent there has been a mission accomplished 10 years later, and the death of Osama bin Laden has helped that to encourage this agreement and the ending of hostilities, and hopefully the successful transferring of the security situation to the sovereign nation of Afghanistan, who will then take the decisions that they need to take with the support and advice of the NATO advisors, who are obviously expert in intelligence.
We talk about some of the details, the fine details behind this so-called strategic agreement. And one of the things is about the troops, the withdrawal that's been announced, 2014. Why is it that we have, for example, an ISAF spokesperson saying that there are over 400 military bases in this country. For example, Kandahar, to be there for the long term, 5 to 10 years. We could mention Bagram, and these are all being upgraded, renovated, and expanded.
Well, I should imagine that these are going to be taken over eventually by the Afghanistan military and the Afghanistan security and the Afghanistan police, because that is the long-term objective here, is to allow the Afghanistans to take full control of their own country, which obviously they haven't had, not only since the American and NATO have been involved in Afghanistan, but way before that, since the Taliban takeover in the 90s, that there hasn't been full sovereign control of Afghanistan by the people of Afghanistan. So this is going to allow the winding down over the next couple of years until the end of 2014 for a very controlled and efficient transition to the government of President Karzai, to the parliament of Afghanistan, and ultimately to the people of Afghanistan. You can't just get rid of those forces. I know you're concerned that the Americans are still there. Yes, they are still there. NATO is still there. But you can't overnight withdraw them. This is going to be an orderly withdrawal and making sure that the security arrangements are in place for the end of 2014.
Gareth Porter, this text that I'm reading at the details outlining this so-called strategic partnership does not specify exactly what role is going to be played in terms of the titles of people from the United States that are going to be left behind on the ground. We're looking somewhat as a scenario as in Iraq. Trainers is that word that comes into mind. At the same time, we have reports, for example, from ISAF indicating there's going to be 450 military bases in that country expanded, and that there are going to be U.S. soldiers on the ground there way beyond the 5-year to 10-year vision. So why is it that the U.S. doesn't admit to this, and they say we're going to withdraw by 2014?
Well, the answer to that is both complicated and very simple. The simple part of it is that it is not in the political interests of President Obama to fully acknowledge the role that he expects the United States military to play in Afghanistan for many years to come, because he wants to convey to the American voters that he's getting out, the United States is ending its war in Afghanistan, and he wants to put a happy face on that situation. The more complicated part of the answer, of course, is that it is not yet decided, officially at least, precisely how many troops will be remaining in Afghanistan beyond 2014. The agreement itself, as you correctly stated, does not address that question. It is to be decided in negotiations that are yet to be carried out. They may have begun, but certainly they are not very far along, and they are not to be finished until after the U.S. presidential election. And of course, that is very deliberate, so that President Obama does not have to own up to a position that he's taken before the election takes place. But definitely those decisions are being kept from the public and may not have been made at all by the administration itself.
Ray McGovern, I'd like to come to you with something that was stated by, they call him a whistleblower now, as revealed in the New York Times article. This is on Lieutenant Colonel Davis, Daniel Davis, in which he said that the U.S. generals, and I'm quoting him, are lying to the public about the success, so much so that the truth is so distorted that it's confusing. How do you respond then to what the U.S. president has said is success in Afghanistan when you have this type of revelation?
Well, you will recall that the major figures here, the generals, have been saying now for years that there's been progress, but it's tentative, it's fragile, and it's reversible. Now, for those of us who have been through Vietnam, we heard the same things from the generals as Vietnam was going down the drain. The generals really should speak with honesty now. Colonel Davis has got it exactly right, and the generals know full well that he has it exactly right. So the question is, how many more people, not only U.S. servicemen, but Afghans, need to be killed before Obama admits that this was a fool's errand to begin with, that he was pretty much misled into thinking that this was not only a good war, his words, but one that could be won, other people's words, and he should acknowledge that now and say, look, let's get the stakeholders here, the nations that surround Afghanistan, let's get everyone together as we used to do when negotiations seemed to be important. We meet in Geneva, we figure it out, everyone has a stake in trying to prevent Afghanistan from blowing apart, and let's see if we can put the country back together, realizing that it never has been one sovereign nation, but rather a collection of tribes and a collection of peoples that need to learn how to work out a modus vivendi among themselves without, and I stress without, foreign occupation.
Mr. Millett, how much of the budget does the U.S. fund in terms of NATO?
Well, it obviously funds a large part of NATO. And this might be one of the reasons why it's decided to, it would be not a bad time to wind things down in Afghanistan as well. We see that the world economy is on the slide, recessionary, and I think America has decided to a certain extent that, as I said, it's mission accomplished. They've done as much as they can do. Now they need to start, to a certain extent, investing in their own country, stopping unemployment and getting the American economy back on a business-like footing.
Okay, let me jump in here, because you've mentioned this twice. When you say mission accomplished, what do you mean?
Well, I think that it's been recognized that the violence has dropped, that the Taliban, to an extent, have been disarmed, and they are now trying to bring the Taliban possibly back into the political fold. We've seen that Al-Qaeda has been driven out of Afghanistan. Osama bin Laden has been killed, and Al-Qaeda is not a fighting force in that part of the world. There are problems still involving Al-Qaeda in other parts of the world that, which may have to be dealt with.
Okay, but then let me just bring in Gareth Porter just to respond to your part of the answer there. Gareth Porter, do you agree with Richard Millett there?
Well, the only statement that Richard Millett made that was at all truthful was that Al-Qaeda has been driven out of Afghanistan and bin Laden killed. The remainder of the statement is absolutely the opposite of the truth, which is that the Taliban today is far stronger than it was 2 years ago, that it grew despite the best effort and the troop surge of the United States military in 2010 and 2011, and that if the level of violence is lower, it is only lower than from its peak in 2011, not lower than it was in 2010 and 2009. So the fact is that the Taliban are much stronger than they were when the United States was claiming that it was going to break the back of the Taliban. And this is a failed war, and Ray McGovern had it absolutely right. The colonels and the generals know this full well, and they are serving out their terms and getting their promotions and not telling the truth about it.
Well, Ray McGovern, then, when we look at the numbers purely in terms of the number of soldiers, we're looking at about roughly 150,000, let's say, versus the, what, 5,000 or 6,000 Taliban. For some reason, it seems the U.S. cannot defeat them. Or is it so? Is this not beneficial to continue when you think about what it generates in terms of all the arms manufacturers, in terms of even certain companies in which senators, it is said, U.S. senators are investing in these companies, this war being one of them, to keep the wheels going, keeping jobs and creating jobs at bay. So perhaps this is something the United States wants to continue. Is that correct?
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. There is this military-industrial complex that is profiteering, not profiting, but profiteering from such wars. There are the generals, as Mr. Porter said, that are getting new stars on their lapels without any reference to the poor little kids beneath them that are getting getting killed, wounded, or traumatized. And there is the perceived strategic significance of Afghanistan. Now, one needs to simply look on the map and see where it's located, and you can see where any major power would want to have an influence in Afghanistan, lest its rivals, China, Russia, Pakistan, Iran, and the rest of the folks there, steal a march and predominant influence there. Besides that, of course, and something that not many people realize, is that the wealth that comes from the natural gas deposits in Turkmenistan, just to the northwest of Afghanistan, that wealth is more than is worth more than all the oil in Iraq, and that is no exaggeration. So, what do they need to do? They wanted to do a pipeline, which they call TAPI, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and then a little slice of India. Warm water port, just the best thing you could possibly hope for. And that's part of the strategic calculation.
Richard Millett, let me talk about something that's, again, part of this strategic so-called agreement. And that is, they want to, two of the provisions, improve on the social and economic development, they meaning the United States, and strengthening Afghan institutions. Why is it that after 10 years, this is part of that, when after all this time, half of the country practically has no electricity? Why have they not been able to contribute to the restructuring of this country?
Well, I agree. I mean, to a certain extent, they have done restructuring, but there's also been the ongoing battle, and there's been a lot of destruction, as you've pointed out. There's been a war going on there. The Taliban have been destroying plenty of what's been going on to create the unrest, to turn the Afghanistani people against the Americans. And this is, again, one of the reasons that the Americans have decided to pull out, because they realize now that the American presence in Afghanistan is not necessarily contributing to the overall social fabric of the country, because the Taliban are able to manipulate the American presence to their own advantage. And every time the Taliban calls the disruption, they can then blame the Americans as saying that this is a colonialist occupation, blaming the Americans. So yes, America withdrawing would allow the Afghanistan social fabric to be able to be rebuilt and to rebuild the infrastructure. And then if it is destroyed by the Taliban, then the Afghanistan people will then recognize it is the Taliban who is causing the destruction. No one can blame it on America this time. It will be solely the responsibility of the Taliban. And this is something that the Afghanistan people will be able to see. And you're right, it's crucial that they need to build up the infrastructure. And that is what the withdrawal after 2014 will allow to take place.
I'd like to find out from you, Gareth Porter, again, the NATO and its budget and how U.S. funds a major portion of it. And we're seeing signs, for example, from France with the new president, an earlier planned pullout from them, prior to them, Canada. Are NATO countries really being steered by the U.S., hence, given the budget and the number of soldiers, that this is a U.S.-led war?
Oh, it's definitely a U.S.-led war, but I think that it's important to understand the hold that the pro-NATO forces politically in the U.S. military and the U.S. national security state have had in the evolution of this war. I've written a story about this a couple of years ago, but I think it's worth repeating that the decision was made for political reasons in 2004, 2005, to really hand this war over to NATO. And the reason was that NATO was a military alliance in need of a rationale, in need of a reason for being, because, of course, the Soviet Union had long since disappeared, and they really did not have any other reason for staying together. So basically, the entire fact that NATO has played the role that they have in Afghanistan is due to this need on the part of the NATO militaries themselves for a reason to continue this alliance. It's not because there was any logic to the role that that alliance has played in Afghanistan.
And Richard Millett, looking at, for example, the issue that Ray McGovern brought up, and that's in terms of natural resources, that's kind of at the behest of, well, Russia and China in particular. Is the United States trying to geostrategically just hold on to Afghanistan, continue their operations there in defiance of China in particular? Because we have heard that the CIA director saying that, you know, Southeast Asia is going to be the focal point of the U.S. military and their operations.
Well, I don't think it's just about, I don't think it's about resources at all. I think that American people, soldiers, and Afghanistan civilians have been dying on a huge scale, as you've mentioned, and this just cannot go on. And they've done a job that they feel that as much as they can do in Afghanistan, and now is the opportunity to hand over to the sovereign forces of Afghanistan. And I don't think all the blood that has been spilled, I don't think anyone wants to see it continued. I think this idea that it's all for maintaining control in the region and to get a hold of the resources is just the conspiracy theory that we hear the whole time over Iraq and oil. And I just don't think it's feasible that the Americans would take that view.
Gareth Porter, also, let's switch gears here and talk about something that has increased by I don't know how many metric tons, and in terms of the revenues, which has been skyrocketing, and that's opium production. And there's so many pictures, just pictures, of U.S. soldiers guarding these fields practically, or are they looking the other way? What is the story behind that? Some reports indicating that the U.S. is actually making money out of this production. Can you give us some details behind it?
Well, first of all, just in one sentence, let me for once agree with what Richard Millett said. I don't agree, or I do agree with him, that the problem is not the aim of controlling resources. I think that it is, in fact, the institutional interests of the U.S. national security state itself, which have to do with its own budgets, power, and programs. So I agree with him on that. But on the question of the relationship between the U.S. military role and opium, I think the problem there is not that the United States military is making money off opium, but rather that this is the main crop, the main aspect of the Afghan economy, if you will. It makes more money than anything else in that country. And so the powers that be within Afghanistan, the local elites, the provincial elites, the ones who really control the opium, who own the opium fields, or who really move the product, are the ones who are allied with the United States and NATO, and therefore the U.S. and NATO forces end up protecting those people and their interests, and in some cases, of course, paying them off precisely so that they can the NATO forces can move their own supplies to their bases, because in many cases these people also own security companies. So really it's a problem of the socio-political structure of Afghanistan and its relationship to the foreign occupation. That's the problem.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to end it there. Thank you very much. Gareth Porter, historian and investigative journalist from Washington. Also, Richard Millett, thank you, from London. He's a journalist and commentator, and we'd like to thank Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst from Washington. And thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Any questions or comments, newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikhail Tahway and the entire team, it's goodbye.